Okay, Mrs. Jones, you ready? Okay, let's begin the Marlington Board Local School District Board of Education meeting. Welcome. This is the regular meeting for May 16th, 2019. We'll start with the invocation with Mr. Knoll.
All right, thank you. Bow our heads, please. Father in heaven, we thank you for this beautiful day that you gave us today. We thank you for the opportunity to meet here tonight, Lord. For those of us in service here in the district, we're extremely grateful for that opportunity. We ask now, Lord, you just bless our time and our fellowship together this evening. And it's in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Joe.
On May the 5th, the Marlboro and Marlington Local School District community lost a great man. Don McAllister, age 92, went to his heavenly home after a long illness. Had the pleasure of speaking with him numerous times, being hired in 2012, and I enjoyed those conversations, some in person and others over the phone. He was a man that I always said had what I called institutional knowledge, something that could never be replaced. Mr. McAllister served on the Marlington Local School Board for 30-plus years. To show our appreciation, the Board would like you to join me in a moment of silence. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. We'll stand now for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Karen Humphries will read the mission statement.
In collaboration with staff, community, parents, and students, the Marlington Local School District will develop lifelong learners who understand and apply knowledge and demonstrate excellence in pursuing the highest standards with effective intervention to challenge every student.
Thank you, Karen. Mr. Jones, roll call, please.
Carolyn Gabrick.
Here.
Thomas Hipley.
Here.
Karen Humphries.
Here.
Scott Mason.
Here.
Mark Ryan.
Here. Adoption of meeting agenda. Any additions or corrections?
No, sir.
Okay, recommend that the Marlington Local Board of Education adopt the following agenda for May 16th, 2019.
I so move.
Second.
Any discussion? Call roll.
Carolyn Gabrick?
Yes.
Thomas Hipley?
Yes.
Karen Humphries?
Yes.
Scott Mason?
Yes.
Mark Ryan?
Yes. Okay, we'll get into special presentations. Mr. Knoll?
All right, I'm going to come over this way. In our state of schools, about an hour ago, we talked about awesome opportunities that we've had over the last year to recognize and highlight some of the great teachers, staff members involved in the district. And we're going to meet one tonight, so Ms. Jessica, come on up here. All right. If you've been watching the newspaper, you've seen some cool things in the repository, the Alliance Review. But this gal here was our latest recipient of the Teacher Appreciation, the Alliance Review, Make the Great Difference Maker of the Month. So it's my pleasure to give her this little certificate and our appreciation as well. You're going to get a picture right there. And a nice round of applause.
Okay, we'll start with Students of the Month. Next.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to present our middle school students of the month. We have two of them, and the first one is Mrs. Bella Graham. I don't think Bella's with us here this evening. Let me tell you a little bit about Bella, though. Bella is the daughter of Melissa and Josh Perkins. Her favorite class is Algebra 1 with Mrs. Pavlik. She's part of our cross-country, basketball, and track teams. She loves running, and she's a member of the New Baltimore Community Church Youth Group. So Bella Graham was our first student of the month. Our next student of the month is here with us, eighth grader, Blake Howard. Come on up, Blake. All right, Blake, stay right there so everybody can see you while I read about you. Blake is the son of Christy and Shane Howard. His favorite classes are Enriched Science with Mrs. Sloniger and Algebra 1 with Mrs. Pavlik. Blake golfed this past season for the middle school team, plans to golf next year for the high school team. In his free time, he enjoys reading. Blake's teachers had this to share about him. Blake is always making other people smile. He is kind and works diligently with his studies. Blake Howard is dependable. I can depend on him to show up every day willing to learn, willing to help, and willing to try whatever I throw at him with a positive attitude. He's a good classmate and a good group member. He's a pleasure to have in class. Blake is a very hard worker who is always ready for class. He's a talented student who keeps getting better. Blake is a positive example for everyone else in the class. And lastly, Blake is a delightful young man and an excellent student. He is a delight to have in class and has a bright future ahead of him. Our student of the month, Blake Howard. Congratulations. Mr. Rogers.
All right, Lexington student of the month is Jonah Hughes. If you want to go head up there, Jonah. I'm a little nervous to come up here today, but it's really easy to brag about him. Some things that his teacher said is Jonah was chosen because he has a positive attitude and always has a smile on his face to share with the staff and students at Lexington. He's kind to everyone he interacts with. He also puts forth effort in his schoolwork and is eager to see the results of his hard work. He's a creative, independent thinker, which makes him a leader in our school. And I couldn't say that any better. Just like what a leader you are in the school. A silent leader at that, but you're always doing the right thing. His favorite subject is science, and I thought this was absolutely amazing. All the years when you ask kids what they want to be when they grow up and everything, he wants to be an astrophysicist and work for NASA. He loves space. He said he loves the mystery behind space, and he wants to try to figure it out one day, which I think is an awesome goal to have in life. Right now, one of the big things he's trying to do is learning how to play the guitar. And he loves the rock and metal music. So congratulations, Jonah. Well deserved. Mrs. Morton is coming up next.
Good evening, everyone. It's great to be here to introduce Marlboro Elementary Kiwanis Student of the Month, and that is Bryce Jones. Get up there, Bryce. Let me talk about Bryce for a little bit here. Bryce was selected based on his ability to light up a room with his kind smile and caring attitude. Look, he's showing off that smile right now. He's always prepared for class with his materials and his sense of humor. Something positive about Bryce said in it. Easy, simple statement. If the power goes out, don't worry, because Bryce can light up a room. That is from his teachers. That's a great thing, great compliment. Totally agree. Favorite subject in school is math because it comes easily to him. Something about his family. He lives with his mom and his brothers. There's a lot of boy power in that house, for sure. And he has two dogs and two cats. Bryce enjoys spending time outside. Most recently, he went on a cruise to the Bahamas with his mom and his brothers. For his future, Bryce would like to play football professionally. Ideally, he would like to play for the Cleveland Browns.
Wow.
Smart.
Bryce, we'll talk later. His favorite position is running back. And Bryce enjoys playing Fortnite, and he can also bust a move on the dance floor, and I think I have seen that. Did you? Do you want to do it now, Bryce? Okay, I was just checking. I want to do that now. And I will have to say that, Bryce, you are a true leader. We appreciate you. We're grateful for your time at Marlboro Elementary. Congratulations, buddy.
The student of the month for Washington is Julia Blake. I do not believe she's here. So just quickly a little bit about her. Julia is a wonderful student, and we're so proud to have her at Washington Elementary School. The number one thing that our teacher said about her is that she's always interested in helping others. With their schoolwork, helping them with a problem, or just needing a friend to talk to. At school, she's really involved with the band, Girls on the Run, cheerleading, choir, and handbells. So congratulations.
town monitor and our staff members here with some special awards. We're going to start with our retirement folks. So, Mr. Grohol, if you don't mind, how about you get us started? Okay.
So our sad but happy retirement from Washington is Mrs. Geneva Dunson. Come on up, Geneva. So just a quick story about Geneva that just kind of sums her up on how the staff and the kids feel about her at her school. So last year I was at Marlboro, and I was coming to Washington this year. And that first day that I had to come to the school to meet everybody officially, I would admit that I was sitting in my car, I was shaking, I was so nervous to walk in the building. And I got there early, and I didn't have a key to get in the building, and I'm just kind of hanging out, trying to not act, you know, too obviously awkward. And Mrs. Dutson was the first one that got there. And she looked at me, and she kind of knew who we were, and just the smile and her presence and that motherly feel that she gave me. I just made me feel so much calmer and welcoming and letting me in the door and welcoming me. And that moment right there just kind of summed everything up about who you are as a person and as a teacher to all those kids at the building. So I just want to thank you so much for that. She's the mother of 5 kids and 9 grandchildren, devoted wife to Rich, her husband. And she's just probably the most caring person that I've really ever met in my time as an educator. And we're so sorry to see you leave, but so happy for the journey that you have going forward with your time. So, congratulations.
All right. Our next two gals, I don't believe, are here, but Kat Green is one of our custodians over at Washington, and Lori Yost, retired kind of midway through the year as well. Okay, so we'll move on to staff recognition. So these are folks that have been with us for 20 years. All right, so I'm just going to read down the names. I know some of the folks aren't here, but just so to make sure everybody gets recognized. So Jane Conrad is our first one, bus driver and cook. Over at Washington Elementary. Vicki Dixon is the head cook here at the high school. Kim Herman, come on down. There she is. All right. Right over there. I'm going to get a picture again. Lexington Elementary. Mike Hoover, bus driver for the district. Miss McLaughlin, teacher here at the high school. Teresa Phillips. Miss Phillips is here. Nice round of applause. Yeah. At the high school. Get a nice picture here too. Oh, here we go. All right, ready? All right, don't move, somebody's lurking behind me.
Mine's the unofficial.
No, that's good. Congratulations. Deborah Robeson, cook at Washington Elementary. And come on down.
But it's at Marlington. Marlboro.
What did I say?
Washington.
I apologize.
That's okay. That's all right.
I apologize for that. Did I say that on my sheet? Right, said? Gotcha. Thank you. And Miss Robin Rubel, I believe, is in the room in the back there. Miss Rubel, come on down.
Thank you very much.
That's good. All right. recognition is for Miss Aubrey Spalding, who's a teacher at Washington as well. How about one nice round of applause for all of our seniors? I need all those 20-year people over here by the big screen for a team picture. Right over here. Start with administrators' reports, food service annual report. Carol Sutton.
The Marlington Local Schools has adopted and is enforcing a nutrition standards policy that considers the requirements of the Ohio Revised Code 3313.814, which governs the types of foods and beverages that may be sold on the premises of its schools. Food service has continued to monitor required nutrition standards and makes the necessary changes and revisions to remain in compliance.
Okay. Carol? It is Business Advisory Council update. Yeah.
It's that time quarterly that we kind of review the business advisory. And as you know, we're working in connection with the Educational Service Center. So got their notes and minutes from their meeting on Tuesday, April 23rd. And one of the things that really caught my attention is, I don't know if you've had the chance to read the Strengthening Stark report, but I spent a lot of time reviewing that. And it talks a lot about jobs and job creation and what our Stark County community can do, and specifically I'm looking at it, what can schools do to help. You know, one of the things that they're talking about doing is having an initiative to connect the regional businesses with us as school people to create what they call a talent pipeline. And basically the whole idea is internships. And we just talked about that a little while ago about, you know, in our strategic plan is trying to do more of those. So I was really glad to see that, and especially internships focused in the career tech world as well. They talked a little bit about a current economy and how people are having a hard time finding qualified people to fill the jobs. And obviously this is a win-win. It's a win-win for schools, for our kids to have the opportunities, and it's a win-win for the businesses because they can mold and grow and hopefully build their workforce as well. So they talk about the return on investment for the businesses. And one of the things they talked about is a cost-effective way to recruit. It strengthens relationships between employers and schools, which obviously I'm glad to see and happy to be involved in. Interns can assist with short-term projects. Interns bring technology from the classroom into the workplace, and that's one of our mantras, is getting our kids with technology. So we really feel we can be a big piece of that. And then obviously help fill open positions with talented kids. And one of the goals of the Strengthening Stark is keep our good, talented Stark County kids here in the workforce. Don't let them go other places. Keep them here. So just a couple notes from that advisory council meeting. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yep.
Well, we'll get into public participation next. If anyone wants to leave the meeting at this point, we're going to get into the the meat and potatoes of the meeting. I think most everybody left already. So. Okay, public participation.
First we have Adam Zorn.
Hi everyone, my name is Adam Zorn. I'm a parent of a child at Marlborough Elementary. And I just wanted to make a few comments about the transition of the school going from three schools to two. My daughter obviously is one of those that will be transitioning to a new school. And we as a family have had a lot of discussions at home, and we've had a lot of opportunities to have our opinion heard. We went to a lot of meetings with the board. We had parent meetings at the middle school. Opportunities to participate in surveys. I sent a few emails to the board. Many of them were willing to respond or say, yes, we got your message. We understand your point of view and what you think. And so I guess the point of me standing here this evening is to say thank you to the board for allowing myself and other parents to have a voice in the process, to be updated, feel like we're being involved, and to know where we're going from point A to point B. And I appreciate that. My wife does. And it's made it really easy for us to talk to our daughter about switching schools next year, how some of her friends might end up at another school. But she's going to meet new friends. And we as parents are going to meet new parents. We're going to meet new teachers, too. We were going to have a whole set of teachers and a whole bunch of different kids, whether we stayed in Marlboro. Grade levels change, teachers change. There's always change involved in the process. So it's been pretty easy to digest from my point of view. And as school year is coming to a close, I'd like to encourage other people to try to process that and internalize it, and then think of, you know, where we're going in the grand scheme of things here. A building's closing, it's 3 minutes from the house, but the other school we're going to is just a little bit farther. It's not that far away. We're still in the same district. We're going to be with a bunch of kids who she'll continue to be with, my daughter, when she's in middle school and in high school. And those will be big transitions, too, at that point in time. So in the grand scheme of things, seems like a really big deal for a building to close. But ultimately, those buildings will be left behind, whether they stay open or whether they close as she moves on. I know from my school district, the building I went to as an elementary child no longer exists. I remember the place. I have memories. The building doesn't need to be there. It doesn't affect me one way or the other. As long as the teachers and the staff and the other people who work in the buildings existing now or in the future, I think those are the things that really matter. So ultimately, that's the point I'd like to make tonight.
Thanks, Jim.
Next, we have Amy Komen.
Thank you for that. I debated whether or not to talk tonight. I've talked before, not since October of last year, but I've been to most of the board meetings since, and the message of negativity over and over has worn a lot of the teachers down, and so I thought, I need to talk about positivity. So I'm a parent, teacher, and taxpayer in the district. I've sat for months and listened. After taking things in, I've thought about it, and there's a lot that we can be negative about, and I've listened to people, and I've understood your position. I get it. If you're not in the school, you might look at the bleachers and think that that's an unnecessary expense. But if you had a grandparent that came to watch her grandchild play a volleyball game and fall on the bleachers, or if you're a cheerleading advisor and you go to all the other schools and the cheerleader's like, why can't we have something like this? Why don't our taxpayers care? Or be embarrassed that other schools come and look at our gym. If you don't have those situations, or drop your cell phone and break it all the way down and have to have a little kid go fetch it, I'm sure you don't understand, and I get it. But I'm here to let you know the board's making decisions based on the facts that they have to make these decisions. I get you could be against the turf. But if you've ever been told, no, you can't use the football field because for a big community event because they just put down fertilizer, you don't understand what that turf has done. The bathrooms, if you've ever been peeing at a football game and had a student open the curtain while you're peeing, and you don't understand why the new bathrooms are that important. But I'm here to tell you thank you to the board members who keep looking ahead to make Marlington a better place. I've heard people talk about the School Board of Ethics and talk about, hey, we have to listen to our voters and be a voice of the taxpayers. Remember, we elect people to look at the facts and make decisions. I know Tom Hipley's been accused of being a flip-flopper and all kinds of things. Tom Hipley did change his mind after looking at the available facts. And he goes by the school board of ethics that said you shouldn't take your own personal opinions in. Remember, the first and greatest concern must be for the educational welfare of all the students attending public schools and keep the students as a focus. It does say adopt a shared vision based on community beliefs. So I've heard over and over the past several months, we said no to consolidation over and over. Well, did we? Well, 63% of the people who could vote voted. Of those, 3,684 voted against. There is a group of people, about 35%, who vote no on everything. They don't care if it's consolidation, new schools, renovating the buildings, they don't care, they vote no. So if you take that 35% off, 1,332 voted against paying for a new consolidated school. 2,950 voted for. So as a board, you have to consider everybody. And I appreciate those who are willing to go by this board of ethics and make the decisions that are best for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Okay. Old business? Old business. Okay, let's get into new business.
Policy committee? Did you want me to speak? Met earlier today. We do policy revisions and adoptions two times per year. This is the spring adoption. We had several policies that we discussed, some revised and some new, and I'll go over those very briefly. Policy 5113.02, school choice options. Basically, that's just a language change. Just so you know, this is all very boring unless you're into policy, so sorry about that. Changes from No Child Left Behind to the Every Student Succeeds Act. Policy 5610, removal, suspension, expulsion, and permanent exclusion of students. It's a revised policy, and this revisions include the update reflected in the requirements of House Bill 318 regarding the discipline of students in grades pre-K through 3. The language added at this time addresses the phase-in mechanism for restrictions on disciplinary action for this age group of students. It also addresses restrictions on academic punishments as well as disciplinary punishments. Policy 6320, purchasing and bidding. This is a revision policy. This policy was revised in response to client questions regarding acquisition of school buses. The purchase of a lease purchase of buses requires competitive bidding. It defines what a school bus is in the eyes of the law as a vehicle designed to transport more than 9 passengers, excluding the driver. And also, this policy was rearranged to just make more sense for use of ease. Policy 6320-25, procurement, federal grants and funds, that's also a revision policy. This policy was revised in response to the audit questions regarding small and minority business and women's business enterprises. It specifically adds those as an entity in the policy versus the assumption that they're included. Policy 6605 is crowdfunding. This is a revision. Revisions to this policy are related to administrative guidelines or prompted to recent attention of the Auditor of State regarding evolving funding mechanisms. You'll notice that these are crowdfunding options are big on social media for just reference. Emphasis was added to the policy to address the importance of privacy for students and to maintain appropriate fiscal safeguards. Policy 7540.02, web accessibility, content, apps, and services is a revision policy. This policy was revised to reflect current accessibility standards that have been frequently cited and emphasized from the staff and the Office of Civil Rights. These revisions reflect the current Office of Civil Rights requirements and should be adopted. Basically, we have all of our websites, our website and all of our linked websites audited to make sure that they are ADA compliant. Policy 8400, school safety, that's a revision policy. This policy was revised to reflect the reauthorization, again, changing the language from No Child Left Behind to Every Student Succeeds. Policy 8500, food services, that's a revision policy. This policy was revised in response to the issues raised by the USDA. The USDA requires that a team meet to modify any dietary restrictions to students who may or may not have a disability or is eligible for a 504 plan because of food restrictions.
Okay. I need a motion to accept the first reading of the board policies.
I so move.
Second.
Any discussion? Call roll, please.
Carolyn Gabrick?
Yes.
Tom Sibley?
Yes.
Karen Humphries?
Yes.
Scott Mason?
Yes.
Mark Ryan?
Yes. Building and Grounds Committee report.
All right, well, our committee met a couple weeks ago. Did you guys want to share a few things? Or?
No, I don't. Do you
want? No.
No, without the really having the resolution, I think this is just basically
okay.
Just go over what we discussed, if you don't mind.
Sure. We did talk about moving forward with some high school upgrades, the air conditioning and the window project. Okay. We did talk about the canopy out in front of the high school, which is going to be demoed. Okay, we have that on the docket to get that done. We talked about adding some fencing at Lexington around the playground, so we're getting some quotes to do that. Some paving needs around the district. We chatted a little bit about athletic facilities and what some of those needs were moving forward down the road. Security upgrades and some things that we have in place for this summer as well. A lot of things I mentioned in the state of the schools is kind of enhancing some of that. And the last thing we talked about, which is on the agenda, is the OFCC documents to get back in the hopper, basically, to move forward. So the resolution that I'm going to ask you guys to pass tonight will get us to the July commission meeting. And that's when we're going to be able to start looking at dollars for a consolidated elementary school. Did I forget anything?
The canopy, when is that? Do you have a date yet for that? Or
I believe it is June 10th. Yeah, yeah.
What was the cost of the canopy demolition? And
was it 16? Do you remember? 16,000?
Yes. Yeah,
I think it was 16,000 for demo.
16. Yeah. And
I was thinking 17.
16,9, so 17.
Yeah.
16,9?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And what's the cost just to paint it?
Well, we had a crazy estimate of like $24,000 to clean it up, take the rust off, and paint it, but that wasn't going to do anything to the structure itself.
Did
so,
we get a second estimate?
I don't recollect. I can talk to Mr. Miller about that.
I thought we had multiple estimates on the removal.
Well, she talked about painting.
She's talking about
yeah. yeah.
Well,
yeah. Basically, what our guys came and said, it's not worth it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of it's rusting out. I mean, it's just in a bad way. So we didn't see any need to spend money to redo it. So.
Yeah.
Was anything else that we talked about in the meeting?
Okay. No.
Okay. Mr. Earl, you had spoken briefly last meeting about Marlboro Elementary and to think about possibly using it for a career tech. There has been, I've been hearing from community members in regard to possible conversations that may have been taking place with the Marble Chapel. Can you speak to any of that?
I haven't talked about Pastor Joel.
Right.
I haven't had any serious conversations with him as far as what?
As far as them possibly being interested in using the building.
No, I haven't sat down and chatted with him personally.
So there have been no conversations with the chapel by you or?
No, I would entertain any conversations, but no, we haven't. You talk about them like buying the building? Is that what you mean?
They didn't talk to me about it, but about using the building.
Okay. Well, they do have a school there. So
at the chapel?
Yeah, so maybe right. The emphasis would be to put the school in there. I mean, that would be an option. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, thank you.
Anything else?
Okay. Move on to the
okay.
resolution.
Will do.
Okay.
So I recommend a motion to approve a resolution accepting the Ohio Facilities Construction Commission establishment of a new scope, estimated basic project cost, and local share in the classroom facilities assistance program as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion.
I know when you talked at previously about the OFCC resolution, it was in conjunction with using the COPS program as the local funding measure. Is that still what this process is entailing?
This process is just getting us into the hopper. However we get our local share, the commission doesn't care.
What is the plan, though? I
Well, that's something you guys are going to have to talk about. I mean, initially when we talked months ago, it was using the COPS project. Correct. But this, that's a decision that
this
you guys...
This gets us in the hopper and establishes our percentage.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And we think that'll be... Do we know what that
it's
could 50, be?
It's 54%.
54%.
Yeah.
So we aren't talking about the COPS program anymore? Or we don't know if we're talking about it? Or
well, that's up to you guys. Yeah, we got to come up with our local share somehow, some way, some form. So last time we talked, we had a discussion about the COPS project
earlier in the year.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you guys have to decide on it.
We had a presentation about it, or I think Ryan and yourself, maybe it was Ryan that talked about that back in, what, March?
Well, it's been a while. Yeah.
So we get this approved tonight, and then mm-hmm. gets us in the hopper, and then mm-hmm. once we're blessed by the OFCC, then we start talking about the COPS program, but I don't think any of that can really get serious until we know the Nexus pipeline revenue, because that COPS program is based on some revenue source that's going to be generated in addition to what we currently have. So I think this is just a step.
That's correct.
Just the first step in getting to that point. Does that make sense?
And where do we fall back in OFCC? Are we back at the bottom? Are we in with the rest of it? I mean, is there considered?
Well, we're a lapsed district, so we do take priority when it comes to dollars because of that.
Okay.
So and then once we get blessed, we're in that 13-month game plan again in order to come up with our local share.
But we're not in with everybody else since we're lapsed.
No. Yeah, we have a little bit of a priority because of that. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Any more discussion? Do we have a first and a second? Call the roll, please.
Carolyn Gabriel.
No.
Thomas Simplett.
Yes.
Karen Humphreys.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Mark Ryan.
Yes.
I'd like to recommend a motion to approve the 2019-2020 school fees as presented.
Second.
Discussion?
Have these increased from the previous school year?
No.
Are they the same?
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. Any more discussion? Call roll.
Carolyn Gabriel.
Yes.
Thomas Hipley.
Yes.
Karen Humphreys.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Mark Ryan.
Yes.
I'd like to recommend a motion to approve the out-of-state field trip for the girls' golf team to travel to Ogilvie Golf Course in Kingwood, West Virginia, and Ohio Pile in Uniontown, PA, on September 9th and 10th, 2019.
I so move.
Second.
Discussion?
Do you need any chaperones?
I'm attending. Good try.
Any discussion? More discussion? Call roll.
Carolyn Gabriel.
Yes.
Thomas Hipley.
Yes.
Karen Humphreys.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
I'd like to recommend a motion to increase the hourly rate for sub bus drivers to $14 per hour effective July 1, 2019.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
Where are we at with, I know we had talked about potentially paying the fee to get them certified, and are we anywhere with that?
I asked Mrs. Sickles what her thought was, and her response was she feels it's appropriate for those folks to pay that part of it because that shows they have some skin in the game and that they're actually going to come and work once we do our part.
Okay.
So that was her assessment.
It's her livelihood.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
Mr. Miller, I have another question. How often do we use substitute bus drivers? I mean, would it make more sense to hire one more bus driver full time to guarantee?
Well, I would say there's probably not a day that goes by, especially this time of the year, where we don't get in trouble.
Would it make sense to do that?
Yeah.
If we could look into that.
That's a good point.
Because we're not alone in this. I mean,
oh, no. You're right.
Around the county, everyone's struggling
yeah.
to find substitute and additional bus drivers. Mm-hmm. So it might make sense to
lock somebody up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like having a permanent sub as a
right.
as a teacher. I've done that before and other things. So, no, we'll look into that. And that might be
I know in the past when we've had a few extra drivers, the drivers weren't working enough. So then they go find other work. So they're sitting around waiting, unless your idea is to, they're on the payroll, just sitting waiting to.
Well, I mean, if for instance, Mrs. Sickles is driving every day, or someone is driving every day to fill that role, then it might make sense to have another person.
Yeah. Right. We certainly don't want her to have to drive. I mean, we hired her to handle a specific job.
She's been driving.
Yeah.
And mechanics have been driving.
Yeah. Allegedly, they've been driving too.
For the permanent, you mentioned permanent subs for the teachers. Do we pay? We don't have somebody full time just sitting waiting to step in. We just offer them more money to be available when we call them. Isn't that right? On the permanent subs for the teachers,
we don't have such a thing.
Okay, but no. Don't we have something where we pay a few subs a little bit more so that they will come when we call them?
Yes, we have a select group. I think it's four or five.
There's five, I believe, maybe six.
Yeah.
They're called committed subs is the name that's within the board motion years ago. Yeah, committed.
Is that something that might be less expensive than a full-time bus driver? So have a committed sub for a bus driver that you might pay them a little bit more that you know they're going to come to work when you need them. I mean, I'm guessing that's how that works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two good options.
Any more discussion? Call roll, please.
Carolyn Gaber.
Yes.
Thomas Hipley.
Yes.
Karen Humphreys.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Mark Ryan.
Yes. Treasurer, you're up.
Item A. Recommend motion to approve the minutes of the following meetings. Regular and special meeting held April 25th, 2019.
I so move.
Second.
Discussion?
I just have a question. Can we start receiving the minutes and the things that need to be read for the meeting maybe a little bit earlier? When I left for the meeting today, about 2:45, I hadn't received the final agenda yet, so I did not get the opportunity to read everything that was going to be presented tonight. And I know I had to leave a little bit earlier because of the committee meetings, but it would be helpful for me to have the information just a little bit before that. I think I'm getting the information a little bit too late to be prepared for the meeting.
Yes, I will do my best to get to you early, Carolyn. Yep.
Is there an example of what you got late that was added that you're concerned about?
I just explained it to you.
You vaguely explained it, but you didn't say, okay, it was a financial resolution.
I left today at 2:45. I had not received the final agenda. The minutes were on the final agenda, not the draft. I did not get an opportunity to read the minutes before I got here. There's a few other things as well.
Okay, the minutes are online, right?
I don't believe they're put online until they're approved.
Okay.
We do not put the paper copy.
No, but the unofficial.
The audios we've been posting. Yes, that is true. Okay. But we don't do these until they've been approved.
Okay. Right.
Any more discussion? Call roll, please.
Carolyn Gabriel.
Abstain.
Thomas Hipley.
Yes.
Karen Humphreys.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Mark Ryan.
Yes.
B, financial resolutions. Recommend motion to approve financial reports and overview of receipts and expenditures for period ended April 30th, 2019.
I so move.
I second the motion.
Who was first?
Karen. Any more discussion?
No, you didn't call for it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Sorry. Any more discussion? Call roll, please.
Carolyn Gabrick.
Yes.
Thomas Hipley.
Yes.
Karen Humphreys.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Mark Ryan.
Yes.
Two, recommend a motion to approve donations as presented.
I so move.
Second.
You want to read those?
All right. Yep.
Gosh.
Donations. Lee and Carolyn Gabrick, donation to the Marlington FFA program for two jackets in the amount of $110. Tall Tales, donation of Zebco Rhino Rod, Zebco Slingshot, Zebco 202, and Zebco Micro 33 for FFA Fishing Derby, $108.98. Washington Raritan Club, donation to Washington Elementary for soccer nets, in the amount of $300.
Any more discussion? Call roll, please.
Carolyn Gabrick?
Yes.
Thomas Hipley?
Yes.
Karen Humphries?
Yes.
Scott Mason?
Yes.
Mark Ryan?
Yes.
Three, recommend motion to approve the then and now certificate as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
Could you just briefly give us an overview of this?
Yeah, so then and now is when we have a purchase made before we have a purchase order process complete. By our board policy, these must come to you when they exceed $3,000, and this one does. It was in the amount of $6,300, and so we need your approval to go forth.
We briefly talk about what we this was a tractor.
Yes, this was an oversight in speaking with Steve on this. It just was, they thought they had done the requisition, tractor got picked up, and you know what I mean? Things were out of order how things should be done. Purchasing should always be done with requisitions first to ensure we have budget available to do those things. There was budget available here, that wasn't an issue, but the issue is we are out of order, and so we have to come to the board for our policy to get it approved.
Any more discussion? Call roll, please.
Carolyn Gabrick.
Yes.
Thomas Hipley.
Yes.
Karen Humphries.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Mark Ryan.
Yes.
Four, recommend the motion to approve the fiscal year 2019 revenue budget revisions as presented.
I so move.
Second.
Any discussion? Highlights.
Yep, we have two revisions here. They're reducing, the next one will be to reduce our appropriations, and this is to reduce also our revenue in the 516 and the 572, so two federal grant funds. ODE does reallocations of dollars, and this happens typically once a year, and they took some of our allocation to spend, and so that's to adjust for that. The amount of $7,227 in the 516 fund and the amount of $50.22 in the 572 fund.
Any more discussion? Call roll, please.
Carolyn Gabrick?
Yes.
Thomas Hipley?
Yes.
Karen Humphries?
Yes.
Scott Mason?
Yes.
Mark Ryan?
Yes.
Five, recommend the motion to approve the fiscal year 2019 appropriation revisions as presented.
So moved. Second.
And again, this is on the appropriation side, so the budget side, expense side, just reducing our expenditures because we don't have the money, so reducing our budget so we don't spend that money that we're not going to get from them.
Any discussion? Call roll, please.
Carolyn Gabrick?
Yes.
Thomas Hipley?
Yes.
Karen Humphries?
Yes.
Scott Mason?
Yes.
Mark Ryan?
Yes.
Six, Finance Committee report. Mr. Carolyn Gabrick and Mr. Mark Ryan. I'm assuming you guys want me to...
I would like to defer to you.
Defer to me. Okay. That's fair enough. So this Finance Committee met to discuss the five-year forecast this evening, and I will do an overview of that here for everybody. So... kind of what I said in the State of the Schools, the five-year forecast is a living document. It's my best attempt to capture the operating fund, the general fund of the district, given the circumstances and the assumptions that I have and the knowledge that I currently possess today. So it does change over time. You're allowed to amend them from time to time. You must approve them as a board twice a year. That is in October and again in May. And so that's what we're doing here in May. Could you put that up for me? I'm sorry. I forgot about that. It's in Dropbox. I apologize. We'll stick it up on the wall ahead of myself.
It's an attachment in Dropbox under the agenda.
So we'll do a brief overview. I'll touch on some highlights. At the top of the forecast, you have the revenue section, and those are all of the items until you see the first blue line going across there toward the center of the page. The first line item is general property tax, which is real estate tax. Fiscal year 19 reflects about a 2.5% increase from fiscal year 18. This is based on the auditor doing what's called a reappraisal during 2018. And so the reappraisal resulted in valuations, property valuations, increasing by approximately 13%. No, you don't get 13% more revenue. That would really be nice. But what happened was we got about 2.5% more this year. Fiscal year 20 has about a 1.75% increase over fiscal year 19, again, for property taxes. And that's based on historical averages once a reappraisal or an update is done by the auditor. Out in fiscal year 2021, you notice a steep drop-off in revenue there. That is because that is when one of our 8.5 mil renewal levies starts to come off of the books. And I'm not allowed to show that up in 1.01. I have to show that down here toward the bottom, all the way down here. I can get to that point. At 11.010, those amounts right there. So the levy expires tax year 19. It is collected through tax year 20. So 2021 is the first year that we would lose revenue if the renewal did not come through, and that's why they have to be put down on 11.010. It's only half of the amount of the levy because this forecast is done on fiscal years, and taxes are collected on calendar years, and that creates a disconnect. So that's where that is. In fiscal years 2022 and 2023, down on 1.020, we have the entire amount of the levy in each of those years, which is approximately $1.55 million. So that is for the reason for the drop-off in 1.01. Can you take that back to the top? Our other big portion here is our state aid from the state of Ohio, called foundation aid, in addition to state aid. And I have flattened this out in all years of the forecast. The district is on something called the transitional aid guarantee. And even though we have received by the formula, I shouldn't say received, when the formula is calculated for us the last few years, we have received less funding than we did in fiscal year 17. And the transitional aid guarantee says, rather than essentially taking that money from a district, it funds you at almost the same amount that you were funded in fiscal year 17. And there's a variety of factors that have contributed to that. One of those is declining enrollment. The other is they had changed in the fiscal year 17, that biennial budget for 18 and 19, they changed transportation funding. And so some of these things caused us to get less funding, but fortunately for us, the transitional aid guarantee makes up the difference. The reason I bring this up is we're coming to a new budget, and so while I have not heard anything to the contrary about the transitional aid guarantee, it's something to be aware of. If the transitional aid guarantee would change or it would be removed, the district could face significant loss of funding. Now, there are almost 300 districts that are on the guarantee in the state of Ohio, so we're not the only one that's in this boat, so to speak, or in this bracket, but it's worth mentioning. 1.040 is restricted grants and aid. These two items are career tech funding and economically disadvantaged funding. These are flat in all years of the forecast. This year we're getting about $315,000. About $205,000 comes from career tech. About $110,000 comes from economically disadvantaged. And those numbers, the economically disadvantaged changes as the population of our students change and the data is reported yearly on those students. And it is linked to free and reduced lunch and income. That's how that's determined. The career tech funding we have been receiving, very similar to the state aid line above. It is also part of the transitional aid guarantee, so we have received approximately that $205,000 for the past 2 years based on, again, FY17 funding. 1.050 is property tax allocation. You notice it's dropped off there. It was 1.6, then 1.2, then a little over a million. That's because we were getting for a while there something that was required by law, which was called tangible personal property tax loss makeup. They did away with tangible personal property taxes, and for a while there, they supplemented schools with this makeup. They have phased that out, and in our case, we have received all the payments we're going to receive, and OD every year updates this, and so there is no TPP makeup in any part of the forecast in any of the line or any of the years. So what's there is homestead exemption and rollback, and those are things that reduce your tax bill. They are budgeted for by the state legislature, and then essentially the state picks up the tab, so to speak, and they forward that money to us. So that's what's in that line. 1.060, all of the revenues. The big ticket item here is open enrollment for kids that come to the district. That is about 2.2 of the $3.1 million on that line. We go down to 2.060. We have all other revenues, or all their financing. My bad, I apologize. These are things like refund of prior year expenditures. These are usually nominal amounts. This year it was higher, but they vary greatly, and so in the remaining years of the forecast, they've been put at a pretty low amount of $37,000 because they're hard to predict when you sit in my chair. And that gives you, in a nutshell, the revenue side of things. Then from the revenue, we'll go to the expenditures, 3.010. That's personnel services, which is salaries for all of our staff, teachers, so classified staff, certified staff, and administration. It includes all substitute salaries that we pay when those people are absent. What we just did was finalize a contract with the certified union. That happened in April at the board meeting. And so FY19 was part of the old contract, but FY20 through 22 includes 2.5% base increases on the base salary and includes an average of all steps for those that are applicable to make a step on the salary schedule. On the classified side, FY19, their contract expires, I should say, at the end of next June, so June of 2020. They have what's called a Me Too clause with the MEA. So in 2021 and 2022, they are getting steps when applicable, and they're also getting the 2.5% on the base salary increase on that line. Moving on to 3.020, this is benefits. So these are payments to STRS and SERS, which are the retirement organizations that teachers and classified staff pay into. This is Medicare payments that are made to the federal government. This is also health and dental insurance and life insurance. For this current year, you're seeing a 6.85% increase on the prior year with three premium holidays included. Premium holidays are things that are issued by the Stark County COG when they have met certain reserve numbers in their insurance fund, essentially. So that we thank them that we get those most years, more than one. That is a nice thing. So 19 does include that. Fiscal year 20 has been calculated on a 3.25% increase in insurance benefits. I should say medical insurance only, my bad. That is awaiting Stark County COG approval. They vote in June, but that is the recommendation that has been made.
Superintendents sit on that committee from Stark County and I think other places. Joe can correct me if I'm wrong on that. And so it is likely that they are going to accept that 3.25% increase, and that is in for fiscal year 2020. They've also granted two holidays in fiscal year 2020, and those premium holidays are also included. For fiscal years 2021 and beyond, I have increases of 7% per year and one premium holiday in each of those years. 7% because this is a volatile area. That you can see quick increases from year to year in insurance. And it is hard to know from my chair exactly how that is going. We get feedback from the COG periodically throughout the year about the claims and where they stand. But 7% is put in there just in case we have one of those big years where we have a big increase. Next we have purchase services. So purchase services is a bunch of stuff in here. This is electricity, water, natural gas, those sort of things. These are repairs that we're making or contracted services we have for trash or for our phones or for postage, those sort of things. Some of the bigger items in here would be excess costs that we have to pay to other districts, and that happens when open enrollment students open enrollment students that have a disability, the districts of residence can claim excess costs on those children. And so this year that was about $400,000 of that 4.275 that you're seeing. The other big ticket item is open and rolled out, and that is about $980,000 of the 4.275. And so that's money that's being transferred from us to the districts where those children are open enrolled, those districts. The other big one in here, last one I'll touch on, is community school. That is another transfer. So students that are our resident students that attend a community school, again, that transfer of our foundation money goes to those community schools where those students attend. We get to supplies. So these are everything from office supplies to supplies for transportation to special education supplies, you name it. If it's a supply or a material or consumable product, that's where it is. We're at $835,000 in fiscal year 19. That is an increase over the $784 of 18. The bus software, for the GPS software is a supply, believe it or not. I know it's a little bit confusing, but that's where we have to put it. That is about $38,000 of that increase. So the majority of that increase is attributable to that, which we approved at the board a budget revision for that a couple months ago. We started the purchasing on that. Supplies I increased with inflation, usually a few percent each year. So that tends to be what you see in that particular line item. Next, we have capital outlay. And so for this year, this includes the gym bleachers that were done last summer. This includes the Mullen property land purchase, $115,000 for that. The bleacher project was almost $100,000. I think it was $99,000 and some change. So those are in fiscal year 19. Then we have less forecasted after that going forward in 20 through 23. And the items that are comprising most of that cost are the replacement of iPads for two grade levels in the district each year.
Can I intervene?
Yes.
On that line, are we talking as a finance committee? Looking ahead, knowing that we have some big projects coming at the high school, ways to generate revenue to cover those expenses?
The expenses that are shown here?
Yeah, no, the ones that we know are coming. For example, the air conditioning, the windows.
Yeah, so you can, good point of clarification, you can spend your 001 or general fund money on capital outlay. It's allowable. We also have the permanent improvement fund. And those sort of projects you're mentioning about AC, you know, in the windows, that would be something we go do out of permanent improvement. I mean, to be all honesty, I could show it here and just do it right here in the forecast and part of the 001. I'm just kind of following the convention of what's been done by prior treasurers. It seems like those bigger projects have always been done and held in the 003 fund. Now, to answer your question about revenue, I think we can get to that here in a moment, but it begs a good question. you know, there's a lot of projects that want to be done. The treasurer's answer at some point always is, you know, we can't do everything with the current, what we have, you know, currently. So the idea here would be, if you look down a little bit, you're ahead of me, that $1 million transfer out amount, that is if and when we do this air conditioning window project, that's what we're going to have to take to the permanent improvement fund to then be able to do that project.
Okay.
Now, as far as going forward beyond that, yeah, I mean, it begs a question as to, you know, we've done, if you look at the transfers there, $1.55 million, $1.1 million, those transfers were largely for capital improvement type of projects. And so there's a limit to how much of that you can do. And if you're looking ahead on the forecast, the number that everyone really should be concerned about is the one that's all the way in year five, down at the bottom, and that is 15.010 unreserved fund balance in year five, and it is negative almost $1.1 million. Now, the forecast is set up, as Carolyn was asking me, it's a good thing to talk about. It is conservative by nature. I don't try to get it exact. There is some cushion there. But there are many things in a school district that can come up, and school districts have experiences that there is no place in the budget for currently. So you have to have some cushion. So would I expect it in year five to be 1.1 negative? I don't think so. But it's a good indication. It's a warning sign. It's like the flashing light. It's a sign that I think we can do this project. I don't think you can do any more that are going to involve transfers from the general fund in that amount of money. It's just not going to be possible. So you would have to look at other options in terms of generating more money by a new dollar levy or trying a PI levy. Those would be, you know, or maybe someone wants to write a check for these projects, which is really unlikely. But we would take that too.
Well, if we can expand on that,
yeah.
To Tom's comment, we have a levy that's coming up. Well, we have our first opportunity to vote on or to put it on the ballot in November.
It will be November of 2019.
And that's the 8.5
mil. We have two 8.5 mil operating levies. That is one of them, and that is the one that would generate approximately $1.55 million.
Right. So the Finance Committee talked about that issue, and in June we're going to talk more about it as a board discussion. But one of the things that we may want to consider is replacing that levy to bring in more revenue, seeing as what we're
up against.
What we can see going to happen in 4 to 5 years. Of course, we can leave it alone, which would be a renewal, a replacement, or a substitute levy, whatever the terminology is.
Could bring
that back up to what the initial millage was when it first came on the.
Yeah, and Carolyn raised good points about, you know, certain levies, and I'm going to be honest, there's a lot of them. There's more than just the ones that you commonly see. And so I will bring some of that information about ones that I think might fit the situation and some pros and cons. And Carolyn was asking about, you know, some of the new levies, are there restrictions on? We talked about property rollback up a couple lines in the revenue. And there was a lot at one point about new levies passed, and I don't know if a replacement falls into that category, and I don't know if a substitute falls into that quarter category, but they might. Some of those levies are not eligible for the rollback, so that is something that the taxpayer doesn't get to realize because they don't have that on their tax bill. And it's also then we don't get to realize that payment from the state. So, you know, we want to look at the options. It's a good discussion to have.
Seems like it may be beneficial to wait and see what the Nexus money produces as well, rather than go to the taxpayers and say, we want a big levy now, knowing that possibly, I mean, we may get more or less than what's projected. I don't think anyone knows at this point what our numbers are going to be from the Nexus money. So I don't want to be premature telling the community that we're going to be asking them for more money at this point.
I agree. I think it's a discussion we should have, though.
When should we know that? Or when will we start to know that?
So the pipeline gets valued in October of 2019, so this fall. And then at that point, yeah, we'll have a really good idea of what it's going to generate. And then the collection would not happen until the following spring. So it comes on the books in tax year 19. It starts being collected in calendar year 2020. So
it would be guaranteed to get that money, or it possibly could be less than that. Isn't there an appeal process they can challenge the value?
I believe there's a 60-day appeal, Joe. I can't remember.
There is.
There's about 60 days that they can appeal. So, yes. while an appeal's going on, I don't know a ton about the appeals. If an appeal is done, they still have to pay, yeah, essentially during that time period. And then it's up to the auditor, I think, to make the determination about what they're going to do with the funds. But I can ask that question of legal, exactly how that would play out. But yeah, they do have a window to appeal.
I know you said that you didn't know much about the appeal. Can you tell me if that is normal operating procedure to appeal it?
I cannot. I do not know.
I would think it would be for that amount of money.
I think that's what the lawyers said with the Rover pipeline, the ones that we talked to last year.
Yeah, Becky, they,
yeah,
came up.
Yeah, they said that's just typical. They're gonna appeal it automatically.
Okay. The good news is, though, the dollars don't stop. It's not like a court type thing where you get, right, put out here. That's the plus to that. It's they get appeal, but it does shut down the flow. So. But meanwhile, we still have...
But appeals would be a good thing. I can put that on a list to look at.
But meanwhile, we still have...
I mean, if they do come back with a lesser value, it is... I believe it's going to be retroactive so that they would get a reduction to that amount for...
Yeah, there would be... To my understanding is there would have to be a reconciliation done by the auditor.
Yeah.
Based on once that would settle the
future
appeal.
Future money's coming in.
Yeah, on future money coming in, I believe. But I can ask that, too. I don't think, Carolyn, if you're getting that, I don't think the auditor says, hey, write the check back.
No.
I think it is.
No.
I don't think they do that, but I want to ask. I think it's on the future. Okay, the value's been reduced.
Okay.
It's like almost like you paid too much too early, essentially.
But the bottom, going back to the levy, we have three attempts. So November would be the first attempt for this renewal, if that's what the board decides.
Yeah, that would be the first time we could put the
renewal on
the
ballot. And if we're going to talk about adding additional money, that would be the time to do it. As opposed to just going just for a simple renewal.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be just something we'd have to talk about. I mean, you could always put the renewal on and then at another point come back with something else. You know, there's many different ways you could do, you know, the levy process.
We've eliminated, well, I shouldn't say we eliminated, two or three continuous levies is what we currently have.
I don't think they've been eliminated. Yeah.
Well, as far as the vote, you mean?
They're continuous levies.
No,
I clarified that. They're not
means that
eliminated.
They just don't
they're
go to a vote.
Yeah.
Correct.
It's a continuous, right, continuous levy. Okay, sorry. Continue.
Can we talk a little bit more about the $1 million transfer, which is possibly for air conditioning and windows? It would seem that there might be some benefit to spread this over 2 years to help our cash flow because, I mean, as I look at this, it doesn't paint a very pretty picture at the end of the 5 years. And there may be, I mean, we still have some buildings needing attention. What do we have set back for contingencies and emergencies and necessary repairs that need done? Is that something the Building and Grounds Committee would consider is splitting this project into 2 years and help our overall cash flow? And then my second question to that is, if we pull the $1 million out, are we pulling any money away from academics, or we are going to continue our academics with no regard to this $1 million? Are we going to have to recoup some money back from what we would be using for educational purposes?
So are you asking if they're pulling money out of education funds? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, so are we going to have to cut back on money we spend educationally to do both projects in 1 year?
Well, we can speak to that piece, and the committee can speak to their thoughts. I mean, as we've looked ahead and budgeted, there's what we have in mind, that $1 million doesn't affect our operations in teaching and learning world. You know, as far as technology and those types of things, I mean, those dollars are budgeted, and we're in a good place there.
Yeah, I think that there's not,
as far as that goes.
We didn't have to for this forecast. You know, I didn't go to Joe and Carol or others and say we got to start cutting, right, just so we can transfer $1 million. No, you know, I just said, you know, let's roll forward with. They let me do the freedom of here's what we have currently with the assumption that we're going forward with, you know, those sort of services or those sort of purchases that we've done before.
I would say Buildings and Grounds Committee, and I'll jump in if I'm wrong, we have cut back to the million. we have so many needs in this district already at this building alone. I mean, we need a roof on this building. And I thought at the million we were being conservative. Spreading out over 2 years, I don't know that that makes a huge difference unless you're generating some large interest off of that money that I'm not aware of. There's just so many needs. I don't know. You can't keep kicking the can down the road like we've been doing. I mean, we need to start fixing things. We need to start moving projects forward. We can't just stop. We've got to keep moving. I mean, it's just, that's what we've done. That's what's been done by this board for years. That's why we're in the position we're in. We've been stale, and we need to stop being stale, and we need to move forward.
Well, from what I see is very few things were done for a period of at least 10 years, if not longer. I don't think we need to catch everything up within a couple of years. I think we need to be fiscally responsible, not put the district in harm's way with the money. I think we're all well aware how difficult it is to get new money passed. I think we should be very thankful that our community is so supportive on the passing of renewal levies. But I look at this, and being a numbers person, I don't like seeing these numbers in red, and I realize that there's conservative estimates going out that hopefully will turn around to some degree.
But there's a reason that it's presented this way.
But if we spend $1 million a year, we're going to get there. We're not going to make it 5 years. And I recommend that we look at the numbers we have, the money we have to spend, and then in a year or two, hopefully we'll have the Nexus money coming in. We can revisit this and allocate the money once we have it in, you know, a realized number to look at.
I would argue that over the last 10 years, we've put ourselves in the situation by not doing anything. Had we taken action when we were in a healthy position, and we were in a healthy position over the 10 years, we wouldn't have gotten to the expenses we're at. Had we done it when it was a minor issue, instead of waiting until it morphed into a larger ticket price, we might not be in this position where we're trying to play catch up.
Well, we are in this position now, so this is what we need to look at. I think we need to be a little more conservative with the expenditures, and I see no harm in spreading it out over 2 years. If you feel the roof is more urgent than the air conditioning, the windows, perhaps we should start with the roof and do that first, and then do the air conditioning and the windows or in some other order, because the roof is a very important consideration to get fixed.
You've been on this board for 12 years, am I correct?
14.
And in 14 years, have you once came to the board to try to spread out doing repairs and push to get repairs done at a public meeting?
Unfortunately, the majority of the board was pushing for new buildings, and they did not want to put any money into repairs, and
That's not true. We have spent thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars repairing buildings, repairing roofs, repairing boilers. Now, a lot of that stuff would have been, I guess you'd consider, emergency repairs. A boiler is an emergency repair, things like that. But we have diligently been repairing buildings. Now, if you want to talk renovations, you are absolutely correct. We have not made reservations, especially to the elementary buildings, because the majority of the board did see that as not a prudent way to go when we're talking about consolidation. And as far as being fiscally conservative, we are. We're not being fiscally liberal or spending haphazardly. One of the major driving forces closing Marlboro was the cost factor. Now, Ryan has put some dollars behind that in savings. Now, they're conservative. He explained that in the Finance Committee. But his initial estimate was $515,000. It's not reflected, the full amount in that. He wants to get through the next fiscal year, partway through in October, and then we'll start seeing real numbers on what that savings looks like. But I would imagine it's going to be pretty accurate.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Okay, so you have, what did you say earlier? You have $350,000 mm-hmm. of savings built in, but you do anticipate...
In 2020, yes.
In 2020, mm-hmm. and then...
The 2020 fiscal year. So it's, we're going to start seeing that later this fall.
That is in this forecast. You know what I mean? I put that in there. And the, not and in every year going year? Forward. It's just in 2020. And then it, what happens is you're just, right, they're no longer there. So you can't take that reduction.
Oh, so it's just a one time entry.
Correct. Yes.
But
just
we expect it to be the 515. You just did it conservatively. I mean,
I did not say that I expect it to be the 515. No. I think
you didn't put that in here, but that's what we talked
515
about.
Well, 515 was the estimate.
Right.
Part of the issue with that estimate is we are, not issue, but the reason it's going on being more conservative is we are keeping Latchkey. And the idea was that maybe Latchkey was going to go out to the YMCA. We had that discussion, I know a little bit, Joe brought that up in one of the talks about Marlboro. But that is not going to happen. So I can't put those numbers in because they're not going to happen. So that's part of the reason I'm going at 350, just being conservative. And that tends to be how I forecast things in general on both sides of the ledger, as much as I can. I don't want to make it an unrealistic document, but I will tell you with certainty, I don't think this is a completely unrealistic document. I think it's a pretty accurate picture of where things are headed.
And if we could look at just total revenue versus total expenditures forecast, leave all the other pieces out. You look at revenue is essentially constant.
Or flat or very little increase, correct.
And expenditures is going up from 22.5 last year to 26 million.
Yes.
The $1 million is somewhat irrelevant when you look at that gap. You know, we're looking at a $5 million deficit in several years, and that is mainly just the cost of running the school. Right? I mean, we're looking at...
Yeah, and again,
we're looking at forecasting.
As Carolyn said correctly, those are conservative estimates as we move out. As you know, less and less. You know, the forecast is really good in the first 2 years, is what I like to say, because you know a lot of the assumptions pretty well, the circumstances. You're usually within a biennial budget. But as you move away from that, you're getting away from sometimes two budgets away on the revenue side.
Right.
And on the expense side, yeah, you're doing your best guess. You're increasing costs because, in general, costs go up. They don't usually go down for any service, supply, or piece of equipment. And so that's the underpinning or the logic, I guess, behind it. Yeah.
Could you speak to which line would have the turf, I'm going to call it reimbursement payment in, but I don't know what the...
Yeah, that is, that's all in the permanent improvement fund. That project was done out of the... not in the forecast.
So it's not on here.
No.
It shows on...
On PI. And I'll show you a PI update next board meeting.
Okay.
We'll have that. Yep. Yep. And that, yeah, those reimbursements go in there.
Yeah, Scott, you make a good point because I was looking at those, those numbers too. Our revenue is pretty much flatlined, but you look at our expenses and 89% of our expenses are personnel. Correct?
70%. 70%? Yeah. 70%.
Which is actually very good for a school district.
Okay, so 70% of our expenses, personnel service, employee benefits.
Correct.
So that obviously is going to go up. You know, we have contracts in place. People need to get paid. People need to make their adjustments for cost of living. That's understandable. But, coming back to that levy situation, that's, I don't think we can just brush it off and say, yeah, it's going to be a renewal when you see these kind of numbers at the bottom of the page here. We've got to seriously consider what we're doing.
Yeah, I think that we need to have a discussion about that, I think.
Maybe some other cost savings can be realized in the district. I don't know what that would look like, but.
Well, I think you're looking at a $2.5 million increase in 3.02. retirement insurance over that 5-year period.
And is that likely to materialize? I don't know. It is very conservative by nature, given the volatility of the healthcare.
But it's not ridiculous looking at insurance costs.
There are treasures that would put a way more ridiculous number in there.
Trend data is a lot higher than 7%.
It is.
To be honest.
So that, whether the COGS had good luck or whether it's just the management's so good, I don't know because I don't work in that area, but we are fortunate that we get 3.25. That's great. for this coming year of an increase.
Yeah. What I'm saying is you're looking into a crystal ball as best you can for the future.
What you try to do.
And we have a picture here that I don't have with my home personal finances, for instance. I don't know where my insurance cost is going to go 5 years from now. So we have a window to think about this and realize, you know, we need to do something. Because if you look over the previous, you go back 3 years, and expenditures, income are both fairly flat on that. So we're looking at a trend upward, and that trend upward is generally in that insurance line. So, I mean, that's just something that we would be remiss not to look at that. And not to start thinking about that sooner rather than later.
And that's the idea of a forecast, yeah. Is to try to get the discussion and the thoughts.
And to your defense, we've seen these before, and it always shows tailing off in the red.
Yeah.
But we've never reached that point. No. But it might be occurring maybe a little more, or the sum amounts are greater.
Yeah, and I haven't.
Where it was $100,000 a few years ago,
sure.
Now we're in the millions.
To be honest, I haven't gone and reviewed, 12 years of what the forecasts
right.
look like. They're there, but I haven't had time to do that. So, yeah, this could be a change for you guys. For sure.
Okay,
the only figure that concerns me is $1 million, knowing that that's in addition to the $300,000 that we'll be using for PI to fund. Mm-hmm. The proposal, and it's my recommendation that we be more conservative and not spend that much in 1 year, knowing that we will very likely have other necessary repairs, and we may put our district in harm's way by spending that much money all at once.
I'll say it again, 1 year versus 2 years. I don't see $500,000, which is what we would break it apart in, being a savior, if you will. I see it delaying a project that needs to be done. That's what I see.
Is there another vote on this project for the?
Yes.
That's coming up in June,
once,
right?
Once we get the resolution and the contract all in place.
So we'll have another discussion about it at that point.
We'd like to talk probably quicker than our next board meeting, to be honest with you. So.
Well, I know keep interrupting you. Do you want to finish your presentation?
It's all related to the forecast.
Yep.
Good.
No, it's all good. I just, we keep stalling your presentation here.
I think we did capital outlay. Yes, we did. We're talking about that. So, and then we kind of jumped ahead to the transfer of the $1 million you see there. But if we go up a couple lines, we have principal on House Bill 264 loans, and that is the loan that was that project involved doing. Joe, you can speak to it better. All the rooftop units at the middle school was part of that project,
and energy savings.
And
lighting and control systems.
Control systems for heating and cooling. And so that is the principal payment to be made in each of the years per the loan schedule, the amortization schedule. Carolyn, you had asked, it terminates in December of 2024 is the last payment of that. Then there's principal other. In there, the $225,000, that approximate figure, that was the last. There's two items in there. The last payment for leases of high school student devices, laptops, and then also in there are a lease for staff laptops. That comprises those principal payments. And the reason for the decrease is going to a less expensive device for the high school students. Carol can give you a little chat on that if you want to fill that in or no. Okay, or I will. That's kind of your domain, but going essentially from a laptop to an iPad, and so that's why the cost is coming down. Those are less expensive going forward. And did I do that okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's lots of reasons why.
Yeah, I'm the numbers guy more than always the reason guy. And then we have interest and fiscal charges. That's the interest related to the two lines immediately preceding it. the principal for House Bill 264 and the other principal for the leases. Those are the interest portion of those payments. Then we get to other objects, 4.30. Other objects, this includes things like the auditor fees that they collect from us when they do settlements of real estate taxes. They charge us for their work essentially that way. Our annual audits, both financial, we have a Medicaid audit that we're required to do. Those costs come out of there. And sorry, I'm drawing a blank. I think I'm tired. We went over the transfer. So essentially, you know, the line is 6.010 is kind of the first line. And what you see in all years of the forecast is deficit spending, spending, you know, more money than you're bringing in revenue. That first year number is 1.4 million, FY here 19, largely due to the transfer that's on that the line a couple lines above. Then if you move down, essentially you get down to 11.020, and that's the property tax effect of adding them back in, and then eventually you get to 15.010, which is kind of the final verdict, and you know that's where the concern and the discussion has taken place on 1.083 million of a deficit. So what does that mean? Contextualize that, right? That means, right, you don't have enough money as this forecast stands to pay the last 14 days of expenses in 2023. Questions from everybody on the board?
I'd asked you this earlier, and I understand it's not going to be on paid out of the general fund, but on the project or the water line that we are going to have to start paying for in a year or two, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we're getting in the stages of wrapping that up, I think, from the perspective of Alliance City.
What do you anticipate the annual payments would total for that?
You know, I don't know. I had a number in mind, but it's not coming to me. I don't want to throw something out there. But I can answer that one for you next meeting. A rough idea, yeah, based on what costs have been outlaid by both parties, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it will, and Carolyn, it'll probably... it'll probably come out of the general fund. The initial outlay for our portion of the work that was done in the capital improvement fund. So I want to clarify that. Okay.
So the monthly payment, or however we're paying for it.
Yeah, I think it's going to end up being a semi-annual, but don't hold me to that. Okay. I think that's what it's going to probably be.
Will that occur with, will our payments start within this five-year forecast?
Yeah, I mean, that is my anticipation. I think that it would start within this five-year forecast for sure. I don't think they can be delayed that long,
okay,
given where the project is.
Okay, and do you have any number estimated for that in this particular
document?
In
this particular forecast, I do not, because it hasn't been calculated yet. So okay. I have an there's an idea, but... We have to go through essentially Alliance City and ourselves and make sure we agree with all the costs, because they were in different buckets of the project,
right,
and who's responsible for what, and eventually come up with Alliance City costs and Marlington costs, and then that'll determine, you know, what each entity is going to pay.
Yeah.
And that should be a fun time, by the way.
Yes, it will.
Best of luck.
We'll get there. We'll be all right.
Yeah, we'll get
there. All right. Is that it, Ryan?
That's it.
Okay. All right, so I need a motion to approve the five-year forecast as presented.
So moved. Second.
Any more discussion? Call the roll, please.
Carolyn Gabriel.
No.
Thomas Hipplett.
Yes.
Karen Humphries.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Mark Ryan.
Yes.
Okay, consent agenda. All right, I'd like to recommend a motion to approve the agreement resignation of Sam Pepper effective January 27, 2020. I'd like to recommend a motion to accept the resignation of Amy Wright, elementary teacher, effective January 6, 2019. I'd like to recommend a motion to approve the extended days for the 2019-20 school year, those folks as presented. I'd like to recommend a motion to approve continuing contracts beginning with the 2019-20 school year for those following gals as presented. And I'd like to recommend a motion to approve the following limited teaching contracts, all of those folks as presented. Takes me to number five. I'd recommend a motion to hire Mike Rebold as the high school oral and gas teacher, pending verification of satisfactory credentials, VSAT and FBI checks as required. I'd like to recommend a motion to revise the resignation date, which was approved by the board at the April 25th, 2019 board meeting for Jackie Shattuck to be May 10th, 2019 now. And recommend motion to accept the retirement of Pam Kraft, elementary secretary, effective December 31 of 2019. Recommend motion to approve the following staff members be granted their second two-year limited contracts beginning with the 2019-20 school year. Those folks as presented. Under number three, recommend a motion to approve the following staff members be granted their first two-year limited contract beginning with the 19-20 school year. Those folks as presented. That takes us to letter D. So for some summer migrant, I'd like to recommend a motion to accept the resignation of Tiffany Woods as a migrant teacher effective immediately. And then recommend a motion to hire the following pending verification of satisfactory credentials, BCI and FBI checks as required, Mr. Lamacusa. Under summer employment, recommend a motion to hire the following for summer employment pending verification of satisfactory credentials, BCI and FBI checks as required, all those folks as presented. And then recommend a motion to hire the following for summer school 2019, pending verification of satisfactory credentials, BSAT and FBI checks, as required, those folks as presented.
I would like to pull Becca Ryan off the certified contract to vote separately. She's my daughter-in-law, so there's a conflict there.
Okay. So we'll vote on number four separately, and then everything else.
Just do that. Yeah, we can just do it as a block.
Sure. Okay.
And I'll abstain from that. Okay.
Okay. Yep.
So we're gonna pull the certified
number four certified teaching contracts out. Okay.
As a separate vote.
Okay. So I'll read that. We'll go back and do number four again. Okay.
Okay.
Just by itself. So under certified limited teaching contracts, recommend a motion to approve the following limited teaching contracts, those folks as presented.
I so move.
Second.
No, wait. We're voting on this one first.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that okay? All right. Yep. So we have a first and a second, right?
Who's the first and second?
Me is first and Doc second.
Yep. Yeah, Hoppers and Doc.
Okay. Any discussion? Call roll.
Carolyn Gabert.
Excuse me. We're just voting on number four. Is that
just number four?
Just right. The one I read. Yeah.
Yes.
Thomas Hipley.
Yes.
Karen Humphreys.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Mark Ryan.
Abstain.
Okay, then I already ran through all the other ones, so now we can go back to the rest of the consent agenda. Okay.
So moved.
Okay, that was Dot?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Second.
Okay. Dot and Karen?
I just, during discussion, I want to bring up the fact that we are indeed hiring a oil and gas teacher to teach that here at the school. I mean, it was brought up last summer that we were killing the program, and somebody may have spoken out of turn, and I just want to make sure that the community understands that that position is still here and we're still teaching that.
Mm-hmm. And we had a great guy filling in this year, just for the record. Real good guy.
Any more discussion? Call roll, please.
Carolyn Gabert?
Yes.
Thomas Hipley?
Yes.
Karen Humphreys?
Yes.
Scott Mason?
Yes.
Mark Ryan?
Yes.
Some announcements? Okay, so it's banquet season. All right, so May 20th is the academic recognition banquet over at Mount. Great one, one of my favorites. Baccalaureate on the 21st. Our art show here at the high school gym on the 22nd, along with the choral concert. They run that nice evening there. The 23rd is the FFA banquet at the Mullen Center. 24th is the choral awards. 25th, the Band Awards and Dance in the Mullen Center, May 27th, no school. Senior exams, 28th through the 30th, and then the 29th is the Spring Sports Banquet. Graduation, June 2nd, over at Mount, and then June 3rd through the 5th, are high school underclass exams. And last day for the children, June 5th.
And what other announcement? The 4x8 team won the district. They came in first place by...
Okay.
They beat their personal best by 10 seconds. Wow. And I think they won by, 3 seconds against Salem?
Yep.
Good.
So,
awesome. Scott's got a daughter on the team, and I got a daughter on the team. So
awesome.
There you go.
Congratulations.
Yeah. All right.
Must take after their mothers.
Okay, special meeting June 20th of next month, June 20th, 5:30, and 7 o'clock for the regular meeting.
Correct.
June 20th. And those will be at the administration office.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Do we need executive session?
No, sir. No?
Okay. Entertain a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Call roll.
Carolyn Gaber?
Yes.
Tom Sipley?
Yes.
Karen Humphrey?
Yes.
Scott Mason?
Yes.
Mark Ryan?
Yes. Thanks, folks, for coming. See you next month. Have a great summer.
Thank you.